Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast. We got a lot to talk about this week, not least of all is the sheer number of games that are coming out over the next month. That's going to be a very busy month for everybody, but at least the games are looking pretty good at the moment. Anyway, so with us this week, we have Ginny. Hello, Ginny. How are you doing?
Good, thanks, Matt. How's it going with you?
Not too bad, not too bad at all. And we've also got Harvard. Hello, Harvard.
Hey, everyone. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back. Okay, so we'll listen to a bit of music and then we'll get talking about all the games. And welcome back. Okay, so yes, we have a lot to talk about in terms of the game releases this month, September. It's probably going to be one of the busiest months of the year, at least in terms of the number of games that are coming out, and from what we can tell, the quality of them. So if I'm going to just run through quickly some of the highlights, and then we'll talk about which ones we're all looking forward to. The very start of the month, we've got Knack. Two. Not that anyone's looking forward to that, but it is coming out. After that, it all gets good. So there's the sequel to Uthawara.
Wow. No mercy of the Nactus.
Jesus Christ.
There's the sequel to Uthawara Rimono, Mask of Truth, that comes out at the same day as Knack. Then we've got, what do we got? Destiny 2. I think some people probably be looking forward to that. Not me, but other people. More for me and more for, I think, a lot of other people who like Japanese games, at least. Summer Night 6 is finally coming out, assuming it's not delayed again. There's Yus 8. I can't even pronounce the subtitle for that game. Yus, I don't know, whatever. Yus, there we go. Yeah, that's probably right. Yus 8. Lacrimosa of Dana. Dana. Whatever. Anyway, that's going to be a good game. People are looking forward to that one. I know we've got, what else have we got? We have, for the sports fans, it's a big month for sports games. There's Pro Evolution Soccer, NHL, NBA Live, Project Cars 2 and FIFA all come out next month. There is also Danganronpa V3 comes out towards the end of next month, and that's going to be just great. Senran Kagura Peach Beach Splash, which is otherwise probably going to be known as Splatoon, but for adults. there's also the game that I'm most looking forward to by a long way all year, Blue Reflection, that finally comes out next month, which is great. We've also got what? Battle Chasers, whatever that is, Resident Evil Revelations, and I think that kind of covers off at least PlayStation, looking at the Metacritic list here. Toho Kobuto V, Burst Battle, there's something about a Gundam game, I think, is coming out, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. So yeah, there's an awful lot of games coming out, basically. and basically depend, you know, regardless of what kind of gamer you are, there's probably going to be something for you. So Jenny, what are you looking forward to this month or next month?
Well, I can definitively say it's going to be absolutely none of the sports games, unfortunately. So not in the market for NASCAR or Pro Evolution Soccer 2018. But I will probably pick up the Konosuba game because I think Konosuba is probably one of the funniest animes I've ever watched. And I love the imperfect, perfect waifus that make up that game. So I will pick that one up. I don't really know much about the story. I don't think anyone does at the moment. All I know is that it involves a very sort of Moira Chronicle underwear collecting saga type narrative, which I think I have mastered. So I will keenly pick Konosuba up. I'll probably also be looking at Monster Hunter Stories because I've played pretty much every Monster Hunter game that's come out and I've loved pretty much every single one, and this probably won't be any different. That, and I'm like that the 3DS kind of has like a new lease of life with Metroid, Samus Returns, and MHS. So I'm going to be picking up both of those. Mary Skelter looks interesting. I'm like not at all a fan of games that are even remotely scary, but I think you've piqued my interest there, Matt. So I might have a look at Mary Skelter.
Otherwise, I'd be surprised if that's particularly scary. I mean, that's a dungeon crawler.
Oh, okay.
It does have a dark theme, I guess. But it's more like Etrian Odyssey, really. Kind of game as opposed to some kind of horror thing. Yeah.
All right. Well, then that will be a probable yes for me. Pokken Tournament 100%. I loved Smash and I love Pokken, so that is like a perfect harmony of games in my world. I also want to look at Danganronpa V3. What else is out? And I mean, Peach Beach Splash, I don't know if I would call it Splatoon for adults. It is definitely for adults, but as to whether or not it bears any resemblance to Splatoon, I mean, that's probably how I'll describe it to my friends so they don't think I'm a weirdo. I'll be like, oh, it's like Splatoon, but with ladies, you know. But I'm 100% going to pick that one up. I was very excited for Cuphead, but that has, I think, kind of died down over time. Like when they first announced Cuphead, I know, was it 2 years ago? It feels like it was 2 years ago. I was really, really keen on the whole aesthetic, and I was like, I could totally do with another platformer, and it looked very interesting. But I think over time, my hype for the game has died down. So whether or not I'll actually pick up and play Cuphead is a huge question mark. But I guess to sum it all up, if it's a game with ladies and dungeon crawling, I'm 100% going to pick it up. Bonus points if there's underwear. So that sums me up for September.
Yeah, and Harvard, what's on your list of to play games this month?
Yeah, I didn't actually know there was a Konosuba game coming out.
Yep.
All I know about that series is just vague clips that I see people sharing on Facebook and whatever, and it's always like, I didn't think they would go there, but they definitely did that.
It's always a game of how far can this anime push it? Oh, too far, I think.
So yeah, I can't play that in the living room, so I don't think I'm getting that.
Oh no.
If you asked me like a few weeks ago, I would have said Utaware Rumano, but that's like the second part of it, and I haven't started the first part, and I've already bought it. Like, my game life is a mess, so there's a lot of sequels this month, and I feel like a lot of them aren't going to catch my interest because I've not played one before. It's just been this onslaught of games. I do really want to pick up Rayman Legends for the Switch because I've not got that the first time around. And I played the demo, it looks really good. Like, the way that they, I feel like the way that they do rhythm and motion in that game is really entertaining. So hopefully we pick that one up. And Pokken Tournament as well. Maybe Blue Reflection would be interesting, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody hasn't heard how much I'm looking forward to Blue Reflection. That's definitely the game that I've been really keen on ever since I saw it first unveiled, I guess, at TGS last year. Even then, it wasn't really. It was just a bit of concept art, and it immediately caught my attention, and I'm certainly really looking forward to that one. I think The whole, I mean, Gust being the developer, and I love everything that Gust does, plus the Magical Girls theme, plus the that aesthetic. Mm-hmm. I'd be very surprised if that's not up with my favorite games of this year. Kind of puts a dampener on everything else that's coming out, really. nothing can possibly be as exciting as that for me. So, yeah, I mean, there is a lot there. Luckily for me, I guess, well, unluckily, it's going to add to my backlog. I'm going to be in Japan through all the month. So basically everything that's released, I'm not actually going to play unless it's on the Vita or the Switch until I get back, which will be a nice pile of games, I guess. But there's still stuff I'll be able to play. Like you said, there's Utawara Ramono, and I did play through the first, so I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be... That's a mix of visual novel and tactics RPG, and it's... the first one was really good, really enjoyable. Pokken Tournament, I get to play that a bit, I guess, in Japan. That'll be good. That's if I stop playing the Rabbids game at any point over the next month. That's... shaping up to, I don't think I can talk too much about it just yet, but it's really good. I'm playing it now, and I think it'll last me quite a while. And yeah, the Merry Skelter. Well, I like anything to do with dungeon crawlers, so this one should be pretty good too. The theme's certainly interesting. It sounds dark, and it could be good. And I think also, was it... Or is that... No, that's not till October. The Tattoo Girls game for Vita. I think that's not till October. So we'll be talking about that.
Oh, I did see
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that next month.
That's it interests me because this is going to sound super weird. Like, several years ago, there was a game for the DSi about tattooing. And it was all about, like, talking to people and figuring out what the ideal tattoo was. And it wasn't deep, but I feel like that idea done well could be really interesting. And that's what I hope that tattoo game will be.
I
think it's going to be mostly fan service, but I can dream.
I think you're pretty much right there. I think it's going to be a lot of fan service, that one. But that's all right. Fan service is good. Everyone gets, you know, a bit of fan service is a good thing. Yeah, of course, Peach Bleach Splash I'm looking forward to as well. Because, yeah, the idea of a non-violent multiplayer shooter kind of thing, that's certainly interesting. That's why I think that's why I said it was kind of Splatoon for adults. It seems similar in I guess, tone, that it's gunplay and stuff, but it's not violent. It's water and stuff rather than bullets, and that's cool. And welcome back. Okay, so for the second section of the podcast this week, we thought we'd talk a little bit about aesthetics. The reason that we thought we'd do this conversation is because over the last week at Gamescom, Sega's the publisher of it, isn't it? No, it's not.
They got the rights from it.
Mm-hmm. They got the rights for it. Deep Silver. It's Deep Silver. It's the publisher. Anyway, the development team behind Shenmue 3 has come out, and they put out a trailer, and that trailer was instantly derided by a lot of fans, if you want to call them fans, for basically not looking the way they wanted to. I think a lot of people kind of expected the game would look like Yakuza or something. And this one doesn't really look like that. So if you haven't seen the trailer, go and have a look at it. But basically, what it is it's got these really gorgeously realized backgrounds, and then it's got character models that look like they're taken from the previous two Shenmue games from way back when. So the plastic, the character models look a little bit plastic, and people are a little bit disappointed, I think, about the animation as well, the quality of the animation of the characters and stuff. Anyway, point being that it didn't look as good or AAA or whatever you want to say as people were expecting, and so, you know, instant controversy. But yeah, I had a look at the trailer, I thought it looked really good. I think it looks stylized. I think it looks quite deliberate. And I think, you know, it's quite an interesting visual effect. It's different. It certainly doesn't look like Yakuza, but it looks interesting and vibrant and colorful and different. And, you know, these are all the kinds of things that I like to see in a video game, as opposed to yet another attempt at realism, which just gets boring very quickly. But yeah, I know you guys both saw the trailer as well. What did you think of it? And, you know, were you sold on the visual style?
I've always been super excited for Shenmue 3, but it'll be an amazing game, but it's going to sell like 12 copies. Because
yeah, of course.
The fact that you're making this game in 2017, when you've already spawned a spiritual successor in the Yakuza series for 5 games, and then, like, remember back when Shenmue first came out, there wasn't really the idea of open world games, and now that's like the leading genre. I think it's going to be so hard to break into any kind of market. But at the same time, I think the sensibilities that were in the original Shenmue game haven't been explored in any open world game since. Just like the day-to-day life and almost cheesy B-movie kind of quick time events and bad voice acting. Like, that's part of the charm. That's a charm that's never been explored since that original game. So I think it'll be a super interesting game. Definitely gonna love it. It's not gonna sell any copies.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, when you looked at the visual of it, just purely on the aesthetics, what did you think of it? Did you think it looked bad, as a lot of people are saying, or you know, were you sold on the direction that they took with it?
I think it looks like what it needs to look like.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily good or ideal or the best, but it's got that character that the series has and hopefully will continue to have. So yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I agree with what Harvard is saying. Like, when I first saw it, I didn't think, like, my reaction wasn't negative. I was like, oh, that's his face. Like, I didn't, you know, like, it wasn't like, oh my god, I'm instantly offended by the quality of this guy's eyebrows or something. Like, it was just, to me, like, because, I mean, I remember playing Shenmue 2 and it was like this, like, you know, weird, like, sort of like Hong Kong X Japan B movie martial arts feel, as you were mentioning. And so, like, I never expected Shenmue 3 to look like Yakuza 0. You know, like, in my mind, I was always like, oh, okay, it's just going to be, like, to me, like, because, you know, the last thing I remember of Shenmue was what Shenmue 2 looked like. And so when I saw Trailer for 3, I was like, oh, this is an improvement. Awesome. Like, you know, I wasn't setting the bar very visually high because, like, Harvard has been saying that Shenmue doesn't need to be a game where you can see, like, every single strand of hair moving in the wind. You know, like, it's always been more about the detail and the environments and building atmosphere through these environments and just sort of slotting in these really cheesy, sometimes overdone or underdone characters that just sort of, like, fumble along through what's going on, some sort of, you know, vague evil that is threatening their existence. And like, I think honestly, I like the trailer. Like, when I saw his face and it didn't change, I laughed and I was like, oh, I thought it was deliberate. I was like, oh, this is funny. Like, they're injecting humor into the trailer. I didn't think it was awful until, well, I still didn't think it's awful, but I didn't think that people would see it as awful until like Twitter blew up and they were like, oh, Shenmue 3 looks disgusting. All this money we spent on the Kickstarter, what a waste. And I'm like, honestly, people need to relax. Like, the game, I'm just surprised that they came through with the game after all this time. And I'm happy with what we got, basically. I'm not complaining at all. I think it looks good. Yeah.
I just always find the desire for people to have these like super realistic graphics and super realistic art direction to be really interesting, because I think the video game industry is the only visual art where that is the mark of quality. You know, if you look at painting, the most obvious example, but also film and various other kind of media, realism isn't that interesting to a lot of people unless you're trying to tell a very realistic story. But you know, it's more about abstraction, and it's about you know, coming up with creative a distinct and creative kind of visual direction. And you know, especially in the visual arts, anything realistic is kind of seen as quite dull. So it really interests me that with the video game industry, the only art direction that's really accepted by a lot of people is if it looks like Horizon or something like super realistic, Uncharted or something like that. And to me, those games, they look detailed, sure, and they certainly look expensive, like there's been a lot of money spent by the art department, but they're not particularly interesting. I get bored with them quite quickly, and I lose any interest in the art, whereas something like Shenmue, which is distinct and original, that's much more attractive to me, and that's much more interesting, and that's the kind of game where I would still be taking screenshots right at the end of the game, because you know, every new thing that I was coming across kind of, you know, excited me. So yeah, it disappoints me that people aren't willing to give anything a go unless it looks super realistic. As much as I like the Yakuza series, I didn't want Shenmue to look like Yakuza, and I'm glad that things are how they are now. I'm just concerned that the development team will go away and think they need to, you know, revamp the graphics entirely based on the feedback that they got from the fans.
Well, I mean, I think I read somewhere yesterday or something that the assets used for the trailer were just temporary, so they might actually end up having Yakuza-esque graphics in the end for the faces and the rigging and stuff, which weirdly I would prefer the animation in the trailer.
Yeah,
like, you know, to me it adds like another layer of entertainment, which I think what Shenmue 2 and Shenmue 3 really should be, like these entertaining games. They look like they've kind of been slapped together in terms of the characters, but that's the charm of the game, like Harvard was saying. And I mean, I feel like if I wanted to play another Yakuza game, I would just go and play Yakuza Kiwami. I wouldn't play Shenmue 3, you know? So, I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of the Kickstarter backers are forgetting is that, forget all about fastest succeeding Kickstarter, most money raised, whatever. It's still, compared to a AAA game, a mid-low budget game. And so you can't expect photorealism from this. Like, that's not where the money should be going towards. I feel like that's just that's just a waste of time to spend all the money that you got from people who really wanted to see more of the Shenmue story, and then spend that on making your game look exactly like every other AAA game. It's a waste of time.
Yes.
I'm actually kind of glad, and hopefully it doesn't end up looking like Yakuza. Hopefully it ends up looking like what the trailer looked like, but more effort spent in where it really matters, the story and the gameplay and just the feel of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully they can keep their plastic characters. I really like those character models.
Yeah, same.
I'm one of those people, one of the few, I guess, that to compare to another series, the Dead or Alive series, I prefer the older Dead or Alive, Dead or Alive 4 and Extreme 2, where the character models were that kind of plastic mannequin kind of look, as opposed to these attempts that they do now to do the kind of the more realistic character models, assets aside. But yeah, I don't know. I like it when it's highly stylized. I like my games to be not like real life, because if I wanted kind of real life stuff, I'd just go outside. It's you know, if I wanted costumes and stuff, I could put on costumes and go outside. But yeah, it's when developers put the effort into making something creative, and I don't think it's a budget thing. I think if they really wanted to do, you know, kind of realistic graphics, they probably had the money to do something approximating it anyway. But I honestly think it was the art direction that the team decided to do this, take this approach, and probably weren't expecting the negative feedback that they got for it. But because, yeah, I don't think the graphics are bad or not AAA. I think they're just different. And yeah, as a creative industry, we should be supporting that. Yeah.
On that point, can I just say that I'm annoyed that Final Fantasy VII Remake looks like Final Fantasy XV?
Yes.
I feel like the aesthetic of 7 is completely different to 15.
Yeah.
But because that's what the graphics for Square Enix JRPGs look like now, that's what they made Final Fantasy VII Remake look like, which is not what they're doing with Shenmue. I think Shenmue, the trailer looks like what you remember the original Dreamcast game looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that was the point, you know. This is a game that is very heavily nostalgic for a lot of people, and they wanted to tap into that nostalgia. I don't think they quite realised that the mass market these days doesn't care as much for nostalgia as people think it they do. So, yeah, I think Square Enix does that quite a lot with a lot of its games, and they get panned by the hardcore fans quite a bit. But the games sell for a reason, I guess. So other examples are when they remade Final Fantasy VI for PC and mobile devices and redid the sprites, and those sprites look pretty ugly to those of us who played the original Final Fantasy VI. But I think that game probably sold pretty well because it's modern. Or Secret of Mana is another example that's just been announced to have a 3D remake. And, you know, a lot of the original fans are saying that they preferred the original art style, and I'm one of those as well. I really like the sprite work that was in the original Secret of Mana, but you know, again, 3D games sell. This game will probably be a better seller than any of the virtual console ports of Secret of Mana that they've had over the years. So yeah, it's nostalgia is a difficult one to try and tap into as an art style, unfortunately. But yeah.
Funny that you mentioned the iOS port of Final Fantasy VI, because I'm still angry at that. That looks so bad. Oh my goodness.
It does, but again, it looks modern, you know. I think it probably sold pretty well to the people who didn't play the original Final Fantasy VI.
That makes me sad, man.
It does. Clean. It's all, you know, clean lines and clean, sharp sprites and stuff. As opposed to, you know, pixels and their fuzziness, which is unfortunate because the pixels are quite beautiful. But anyway, another discussion for another day. And welcome back, everybody. So for the last section of the podcast this week, we thought we'd catch up with Final Fantasy 15. At Gamescom last week, there was a lot of announcements that were made around Final Fantasy 15, and there's a lot of stuff that's been happening in ongoing development with the game. So we figured it was probably worth having a talk about it, since it's been a fairly polarizing game, and whether, you know, some of the new stuff is of interest. So the main announcements, I think, from Gamescom were probably that Final Fantasy 15 will be coming to PC and mobile, and the mobile game looks very different and good, but a lot of people don't like it because it's not, you know, realistic again. And what was the other major announcement? There was a Final Fantasy 15 and Assassin's Creed crossover, which was interesting. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And there's the ongoing, in terms of ongoing development, there are more chapters for each of the main characters, giving them more backstory and stuff like that. And then finally, the producer came out and said something about how he'd like to give the women more of a story as well, because they're pretty much left out of the game at the moment. And I think that's a good thing, because the women are the more interesting characters anyway. No offense to Ignis. Ignis is still cool, but because he cooks. He's a great cook. And Prompto's pretty cool too. He's a pretty good photographer. I wish I could take photos like him. But yeah, so it'd be nice to see some of the women, especially Iris. Hint, Square Enix. Hint, Iris. Lots more Iris. It'd be really great if she had more of a story, and had a chapter of her own, I guess, which would be cool. But yeah, what have you guys thought about how Final Fantasy 15's been plugging along? Because it has been, I guess, an ongoing project from Square Enix rather than release and forget. And what we've got now is very different to what we had when the game originally came out.
I am enjoying the sort of slow trickle of backstory, because I think that's what we really needed during the game, actually, would have been all this context. And I mean, Prompto's chapter would have fit perfectly into the game. You know, I think that the stuff that we are getting now, it's great that we're getting it, but part of me also feels like we should have just had it within the main game itself. Like, I kind of feel like with the release of the backstories, they're kind of playing catch up a bit in terms of telling the full narrative of the game, which, I mean, is completely fine. But I think that Final Fantasy 15 as a game, to me, has always been a game that looked beautiful, but was always lacking a bit of the, I suppose, Final Fantasy trademark narrative that we were so used to getting. So, I mean, yeah, it's great that we're fixing that now. We're getting all these backstories. Well, by all these, I mean, we've got two so far, but I know they're making more. In terms of how I feel about the stuff with the women, though, I think I'm most excited for that, but I don't know if that means that we're going to get a full backstory, like a, you know, like a chapter Iris or a chapter Lunafreya. You know, like, that would be ideal. As to the degree or the extent of what Square Enix wants to do with that, I mean, we don't know at this point. But I think as a project that is ongoing, like Final Fantasy, you know, Square Enix drip feeding this to us is probably the way that makes the most commercial sense. Each time they've got enough space between the chapters that people sort of like build up some hype, like what's coming next? And like every time, I think doing it for the lads first, who already have a fan following, is commercially smart, because everyone's like, oh, look, now we get to look at, you know, Ignis's backstory or Gladio's backstory, and oh, he must lift a whole shit ton. I don't know what whatever guys say when they think about Gladio. I don't know, but I just think that
I think most of us just think we wouldn't want to mess with his sister.
I mean the thing with Gladio is, I mean, well, not with Gladio, sorry, with the story is, I think what they're doing basically makes commercial sense. I get why they're doing it, but I really, really wish, and I really feel the game would have benefited from having all of this narrative development inside the plot, because it wasn't a long game comparatively. Like, we've slogged through other Final Fantasy games that were way longer, and I think fans that have waited so long for Final Fantasy 15 would have been happy to slog through all these hours of gameplay if you know, this had been in there from the start?
I just don't think they actually had it in the start. I think...
You think they just hadn't...
Hadn't got to that point yet. What they had to get this game out after 10 years of development. And on top of that, they needed to... You know, it couldn't have just been a release and then forget, because it needs to, you know, it needs to become like a franchise in its own right in order to justify the 10-year development cycle. So that's why we've got, you know, this odd, you know, mobile game, which is different. We've got, there's already a mobile game that's on there, which is, you know, setting the world, but it's like one of those...
Brave Exodus?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
There's also... The pinball minigame, which has a separate mobile game release as well. There's these extra character chapters, as you said. There's that film that came out at the start as a prequel. So, you know, they had to build this into like an entire property in its own right. And I think what they got out with the original game was kind of the base platform. And from there, they're going to build it out with these little, you know, these additional stories, which I agree help certainly make the characters more palatable. But I just don't think it could have been in the original game, because they just didn't have that that direction at that point in time. And I suspect that a lot of this stuff that's coming out now is actually a result of, you know, people saying they like this about the character. So Square Enix is kind of, you know, working with that. They're getting feedback, I guess, on what people liked and disliked about the various characters, and they're building, you know, stories to accommodate that, which is good. I think it's, I really like that it's this ongoing development project. I really like that, you know, they're adding multiplayer in later, which will be interesting. There's a VR thing, I think, which is in development, which will be interesting. There's just, I like that it's this kind of live project, and it's not just DLC, it's an actual, you know, they actually build into it substantially, almost like an MMO as opposed to a standard game cycle, which is cool. But yeah, they do need to give the women more of a showing. I originally thought that it might have been, you know, a Final Fantasy 15 2, which would give the girls a chance to shine. A bit like, you know, Final Fantasy 13 2 gave Sarah her own game, basically. But they've ruled that out, I believe. I don't believe there is a Final Fantasy 15 2 on the cards, which is unfortunate, but it might be just because these character chapters are substantial enough that they might build one for Luna Freya or Iris or Cindy. Sydney, sorry.
Sydney.
Sydney.
Oh my god. What about the Assassin's Creed festival, though? Like, do you think events like that are also, I guess, are they trying to tap into like a new fan base? Are they like, what exactly do you think these sort of revolving crossover events are really doing for the Final Fantasy 15 machine, I suppose?
Yeah, it's on fan service, isn't it? Because I wouldn't have thought that the Assassin's Creed and Final Fantasy fan bases have the greatest crossover out there. I mean, I can see that the costumes would kind of work anyway, because, yeah, they're both... I don't know. I get the sense that the costumes might look so out of place on the characters.
I'm trying to imagine Gladio. Like, it would be the most conspicuous assassin to ever be. You know what I mean? It's just...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess they probably thought that they couldn't get away with the swimsuits for this one, so they might as well do some other DLC costumes instead. It would have been fun to see swimsuits Noctis running around in Speedos. That would have been hilarious.
Well, I mean, when it comes to PC, people are going to inevitably mod, you know, some nudity or some Speedos in there anyway. So it's, I mean, you're going to get your wish, I guess, in a roundabout way.
Yeah, but more seriously, I think they're all right. I think that it makes sense, more sense, I guess, for Assassin's Creed than probably some of the other properties out there. At least it's not like they're doing a Destiny crossover. That would have been terrible, horrible.
It would have made no sense. But then again, Assassin's Creed crossover doesn't make a lot of sense either. Part of me just thinks it's like it's Final Fantasy 15 being like, oh yeah, we're a AAA game too. We want to be part of this party as well.
Yeah, I mean, maybe when multiplayer comes out though, we'll get a Destiny crossover. Because multiplayer, AAA, like, it's all in the same pool, you know, Matt. You're going to get to see Ignis with guns and I don't know, like a Master Chief ripoff outfit, you know, this, all the great things about Destiny 2 that people love.
Yeah, it'll just be interesting to see where they go from here, because obviously they do have those four character chapters, which makes sense to do first. Once they've run through the four main characters, the boys, where they go next with the extra story and stuff. Because there are some other interesting characters. I can't even remember the name of the guys. The bad guy. I can't remember the name of the bugger. I've got a mental blank. The one that's got the really cool hairdo and...
Oh my god.
He wears the trench coat. Jesus.
His name is Arden.
Oh, for God's sake. That's how long it's been since I played Final Fantasy 15.
Oh my god.
I actually haven't got into... I haven't started those. I started the first of the character chapters very briefly and that was it.
Yeah.
So I've got to get back into it in a big way. But yeah, it'd be cool if he got a chapter.
He's like Darkest Timeline McCree. Like, yeah. Seriously.
Yeah, it'd be great if he got a chapter. There is enough characters out there that could build some. They could build a whole bunch more.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Expanded universe and stuff.
Honestly, though, I don't really want to see Final Fantasy XV become the next Fabula Nova Crystallis or the next Nivalis Alliance. You know, I just want to see 16. I want to start working on 16 before we get exhausted of 15.
Oh, I don't think you'll be that lucky, Albert.
Yeah, I don't want to wait another 10 years.
Final Fantasy 16 is a long way away, yes. Yeah, we won't even have rumors about that one being in development, probably until next generation, I suspect. Mm. I really do think that Square Enix is committed to Final Fantasy 15 being the Final Fantasy game for the rest of the gen. So PlayStation 5 might, you know, we might start seeing some of this Final Fantasy 16. I guess it's just a consequence of game development being such a bigger project these days. And unless you're Activision and churning out Call of Duty every year to diminishing returns, if you want to keep the quality of the franchise high, you kind of need to take longer between games and kind of find ways to make them profitable.
With that philosophy, like spending longer to make your game the best it could be. I'm not as okay with spending longer because you want to make side story DLC for every single character in the previous game, you know?
Well, I mean, as long as it adds to it, I don't see the problem with it. And I think these DLCs add to the game. I don't think anybody's debating that. So, yeah, as long as they keep doing that's fine as far as I'm concerned. It's better than having the DLC for, one tiny little mission. as some other certain open world games do, mission packs with a couple little more icons on the main map to follow around and nonsense like that. I'd much rather they do something substantial with a DLC, which...
Slightly different coloured guns. That's what everybody wants.
Yeah.
Horse armor. those were the days. So I think the Square Enix approach to DLC, at least for this game, has been pretty good and fair and advances the game. So that's good.